Morning and welcome to Radio Rehab. Your host this morning will be Miss Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warren County Court Substance Abuse Program. Like all our talk programs, we encourage you to call in to 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. This is a brand new program that we hope you'll definitely enjoy. And now, Radio Rehab with Lisa Seif.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Radio Rehab. It's always good to be back and listen to people share their experience, strength, and hope with us. And today's guest has a lot of experience, incredible strength, and lots of hope to share with us about a woman, a mother, a wife that is in recovery from alcoholism and has been for almost 21 years. And just her story and her journey, I know that you will get a lot out of hearing Therese, who is a dear friend of mine that I've known and met 27 years ago on a 12-step call, and she'll probably tell us more about that. Before I introduce you to her, I just want to remind you that you can now hear Radio Rehab on the internet. So if you have family in San Francisco or wherever, Florida, tell them to go to 1400 AM WEOA.com. That's 1400 AM WEOA.com. They can hear us live and they can call us at 888-846-7867 or always 424-1400. This is a talk show. It's a discussion. It's an opportunity for you in the community to call Therese and ask questions, make comments, sharings. This is your show. And Therese is taking her time today to come and share her story with us. And I'm excited to hear her story again. I haven't heard it in years. She's sophisticated and she's an example of what recovery and the 12-step programs can do to a broken soul. So let me introduce you to Therese. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa.
So
good morning,
good to
everybody.
See you. Yes, great to see you and have your energy here with us today. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Your story. I didn't know you were from Henderson.
I grew up in Henderson. I went to grade school and high school in Henderson and college in Owensboro.
So you're a Kentuckian almost.
A Kentucky Hoosier or Hoosier-ucky.
Well, you know, they say it takes 2 days of sobriety in Indiana to total 1 day of sobriety in Kentucky. I don't know if that's true or not.
I don't know why that would be.
Yeah, really.
Because we're smarter in Kentucky.
Ooh, for sure, for sure. So anyway, yes, about you.
Well, I guess Kentucky is the start of my story with alcoholism because that's where the effects of alcoholism really started taking hold in my life. We lived up near Cincinnati, always lived on the Ohio River, always. And we lived in a little river town up near Cincinnati. And we had to move back to Kentucky, to Henderson, where my mom's family lived because my father suffered from alcoholism. He was very young. He ended up dying at 39. I was 13.
Oh, my. So did you know he had alcoholism as a child?
Well, I did. Of course, I didn't really know. You know, I didn't understand it. But I guess from the time I was 10 till I was 13, I got a little bit of understanding of it. Mm-hmm. And to me, an alcoholic was someone who wore their gray work pants years after they had never worked, and I had half pint of Yellowstone in their back pocket.
Kind of a downtrodden image.
Yeah, and that was my dad, and it was, and we grew up Catholic, and so, divorce in the 50s and 60s, was a huge no in the Catholic Church, but my mother was encouraged to divorce my dad just so he would have to stand on his own two feet, and take
responsibility. That was even before the word enabling was invented.
So right.
Your mom decided to not enable him anymore.
Right. And but he was still always in our lives, because she loved him very much. She loved him till the day he died. Mm-hmm. But, he just couldn't get it. He just couldn't get sober. And he died of cirrhosis at 39. Something happened to me when he died. There was a lot of embarrassment and shame and that. I mean, he was a college graduate, but he worked at the janitor at our school where we were charity cases. You know, we couldn't afford to pay. They, you know, the church paid our tuition. And it was just a lot of embarrassment and shame
and
growing
up. And at 13,
up.
You really, really start to feel all that.
And, you know, mother came home from the hospital and said that daddy was basically on his deathbed, but if he made it through, she was going to bring him home and we were going to take care of him. And I'm like, I don't think that's a good idea, you know, and I think at that time I thought I had wished him dead, you know, and he did die, and darn, I just shut down.
Yeah.
I just shut down emotionally, and I worked and I became a super achiever, and I just did, you know, a captain of the cheerleaders, you know, every club I could be in, anything I could do to not be at home, not have to stop and settle down and look at myself. I just went. And I think that was my first real drug.
Adrenaline.
Activity and achievement.
Wow, and that's
adrenaline.
Interesting.
And
that was your escape.
It was my escape.
That kept you distracted from your feelings. And
exactly.
The loss. And
exactly. Because I just shut down. I couldn't cry. I just, you know, wouldn't feel. I refused to feel. I just concentrated on being cool and tough. And then I got out of high school, and geez, all those feelings started coming in. And I remember one day I was driving down Green Street in Henderson, and between one stoplight and the next, I just broke down and I was weeping. And I'm like, no, this isn't for me. I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to drink and drug. I made a conscious decision.
Because you started to cry?
Yeah.
And you couldn't handle crying?
I couldn't handle crying. I couldn't handle my feelings. And, you know, I was out of high school. I was supposed to be finding, you know, myself, my life, and all that. And
sure.
I had been so busy, I had never stopped to look at myself, so I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I wanted. I just knew I didn't want to feel the way I was feeling. And I was really smart in school, and I got a scholarship to college. And, you know, I went through all the motions, got through college. But basically, I concentrated on feeling good, you know, making myself feel okay. And I still tried to achieve. That was kind of maybe cellular, but because I, you know, if you read about children in alcoholic families, there are roles that the children take on.
And I bet you were the hero.
I was the hero. And I'm here to tell you today that families don't need heroes. They need people.
Wow.
And, you know, it took me a long time to go from being in a role to being a person. And that's what I found in recovery.
So you kind of became a role
for
the family system and
for the world.
The hero.
That's how I saw myself, and that was how I could identify in the world and who Therese really was deep down inside. I think I was afraid of who I was.
Sure.
You know, and I just got married right out of college because I really just didn't know what else to do. We partied together a
lot. So you had started to drink by then?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Through college?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I started to seriously
when you made that conscious decision.
Yeah.
You did it.
I did it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Because I had drank before and I liked it, and it made me feel good, but I don't know if, and I had even gotten drunk, you know, and acted a fool. But I don't think that it really was a huge problem for me until I really made a decision. And I know that's not the path most people go. Most people just kind of, they take that first drink and wow, they're
something
off and running.
Something smooth happens, yeah.
And, you know, something smooth happened for me, too. But, you know, I guess I was such a play actor.
You were busy trying to be a hero.
Yeah. So, I mean, but I really made a decision that I was going to drink and drug because I couldn't feel the way I was feeling. So, gosh, I did that for many years.
So were you a functional?
Yeah. Yeah. I got a great job out of college and then moved a professional job and then moved to Evansville, like 8 9/10 months pregnant with my first child. And I ended up leaving my job because it was a state job with Kentucky, and I couldn't have that and live in Indiana. And so then I, you know, played the housewife role for about 6 or 7 years. And I was functional. You know, mm-hmm. I grew a garden, and I took care of my kids, and I took them to the library, and I did all that good mommy stuff, you know. But I was drunk or stoned most of the time, you know.
Isn't that something? Huh?
And then I went back to work because I really still had that achievement thing going. And I went back to work, and I did okay there. And, you know, people will say, you know, if you just have willpower, you can stop drinking. Well, this is willpower to me. Full-time job, working on a master's degree, room mother for my kids, house clean, yard mowed, meals cooked for the week.
Jeez.
Drink in hand. That's willpower.
In a way, it is.
It was so
to keep all that going.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, your alcoholism rearing its little head underneath all that.
It was so important for
me. It takes a lot of will.
And a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it was so important to me to look okay.
That was as important.
Yeah. But, of course, my marriage had crumbled. My home life really wasn't.
Because you're drinking?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was in a relationship with a man who, I guess, he would be a great Al-Anon. And, you know, sometimes I wonder if we had made it down that long, dark hall together and come out on the other end, what it would be like. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we didn't make it. And I left. And because I guess I was like, he wants to control everything about me. And by golly, he's not going to control my drinking, you know.
And so that was the straw that broke the camel's back?
Well, sort of.
You're drinking?
But yeah, I think that was my part. Mm-hmm. That was my part in it. Because I'm a good person.
Right,
you know,
absolutely.
And I really tried to be a good wife. And
sounds
I
like you were.
Tried to be a
drink
good,
in hand.
Good mother, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was all drink in hand, and it just didn't work.
He was probably trying to control because he felt you were going out of control with the drink, but you didn't see it at the time because you had the garden and the meals and the perfect
He was
mom.
A counter.
Yeah.
But I had some, you know, episodes during that time and some narrow escapes, and I could have really, you know, gotten hurt. And I put myself in positions that, you know, were not in my best interest at all.
After the marriage?
Even in the marriage. Because when I went back to work, I found a whole new cadre of friends that liked to party. And they thought I was smart, and they thought I was fun.
And you were.
And I wasn't finding it at home, you know, so
right,
I went
sure.
out and got it. And but then after the divorce, then the last, but during my marriage, that's when I first came to AA.
Oh.
And that's when we met. I was still married to my first husband when
you
we
were
met.
You were when you and I met?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At a bar?
Yeah, at a bar. It was set up, Lisa.
Right, by another AA person, I think.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'd been going to some meetings, and these old guys, you know, they said, you need to talk to a woman, you know. And so they
connected
us.
So this is what you all think is a woman? Okay.
But you were sober.
Yes, I was sober. That's right.
Yeah. And that meeting always stands out in my mind. It's like it was yesterday. And,
I remember it, too. You were asking a lot of questions.
Yeah. And I think I just didn't want to be an alcoholic.
No, you sure
you
didn't.
Know? But the thing is, well, it didn't fit with my image.
Absolutely not. You
know?
You were functional.
And I was never going to be like them. You know, all the thems I grew up around my life that were alcoholics. I was never going to be like them. And I didn't think I was like them.
You weren't. And that kept you in denial. That was not your friend. It was your enemy to think like that, really.
Yeah.
Because you weren't like them.
But that's the thing. My brain is my enemy.
Yeah.
My thinker is my enemy. But, you know, 3 years after the divorce were the worst 3 years of my life with my drinking because, you know, any check or balance I'd had on it with my, you know, husband was gone. I was free.
No one was watching anymore.
No one was watching.
What about the kids? How many?
I had two sons.
You had two sons. That's what
I
thought.
And I became a weekend mom. They stayed with their dad. Mm-hmm. And I became a weekend mom. And
was that because of your drinking, too?
Well, yeah, because he was going to countersue me for custody. And he worked at home. So it kind of made sense. You know, he was the one who was home when they got off the bus. And it kind of made sense. But I was still conscientious
about it. Well, parenting would have interfered with your drinking, too. So as long as they had a good dad that was there, you could be there on the weekends.
Right.
That sounds like a smart alcoholic decision to me. You weren't abandoning them. You were allowing them to be with the parent that was home.
That was the most, or at least in his mind, was the best parent.
Oh, well. Sober anyway, or dry or something.
But anyway, but then 3 years after the divorce, then I guess it would have been 1989, and I was on a Thanksgiving day, I had gone to volunteer at the Salvation Army and served lunch, you know, because I was a pretty good person. You know, by then I'd finished my master's degree. I was working in social services and, you know, real certified do-gooder, you know, kind of fits my hero image.
Sure.
So after we served lunch, well, gosh, I had that whole day ahead of me. And so I just started drinking. And by 3 a.m., the day after Thanksgiving, the blue lights were behind me on the Lloyd Expressway, and I spent the night in jail, and it's the best thing that ever happened to me, because it made me think, and I started going to meetings again, and I found my way to the Friday night women's group, Women's Anonymous, and I think it's about the oldest group of recovering women in town, and I found my way there, and you know, these ladies listen to me to a point, and then they started challenging me. And because I laughed too much. I laughed at inappropriate things. You know, I said things that were obviously not true, although I thought I was a very honest person.
Yeah, but you were in such denial still.
Yeah, and you think you really know yourself.
Yeah.
But not at all.
No.
And these women would challenge me, you know, and say, oh, yeah, you're fine.
Yeah,
you're fine. Now, how are you really?
Yeah.
You know, what's really going on?
You don't end up in an AA meeting when you're all fine.
When you're fine, yeah, when everything's fine.
Right.
you know, I owe my life to those women. And you. You know, because our meeting never left my mind. You know,
so you knew where to go back to.
I knew where to go, right.
And so maybe all those times we talk to people about recovery, there really isn't a deaf ear. It may not hit them at that time, but eventually.
It's never wasted.
Yeah,
it's
that's good for us to remember.
It's, you know, you can plant a seed. And, you know, I go to my home group every week. And I think it's important to be at meetings. And, you know, I think some people think you're going to graduate from AA. But the thing is...
the ones that graduate scare me.
Yeah, you can't be too smart.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And and I go every week. And because I think people who have been around a while, when they show up, they give the newcomers hope. And also,
definitely,
we learn from the newcomers, because things change. You know,
and we can still go into denial.
Absolutely.
You're 21 years clean. I'm almost 30 years clean. We can still go into wishful thinking quick. Well, Radio Rehab, don't go away. We have to take a break. This is an incredible conversation today. We're hearing from Therese and how she's sharing even a hero in life that looks real good to everybody and smells real good everywhere can be dying inside from alcoholism. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
It's Macy's home sale. Take 50% plus an extra 10% off all Martha Stewart Collection enamel cast iron casseroles. All down and down alternative comforters and pillows, 50% off. Samsonite, Delsey, and Travel Pro luggage, 50% off plus a $50 mail-in Macy's gift card. And Charter Club Damask sheet sets, 40% off. Now, when you wear red, you support Go Red for Women, and you get an extra 20% off store-wide, including home. Savings off regular sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply. See store for details.
As a pizza delivery guy, it's my job to deliver your pizza in 30 minutes or it's free.
Turn left ahead.
If I don't, my boss isn't happy. So I rely on the right guidance to get me where I need to go.
Turn left now.
I feel the same about my taxes. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step. It automatically double checks along the way, which helps me know it's done right and get my maximum refund guaranteed.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Money back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
All you ladies out there, this announcement pertains to you, so listen up. Every 9.5 minutes, someone in the U.S. is infected with HIV. Did you know that HIV/AIDS is the leading cause of death for African-American women ages 25 to 34? Among women living with HIV/AIDS, 64% are black. HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, has no symptoms. Many women and their partners are walking around with the virus as I speak to you this minute and don't even know it. This could be you. To find the nearest testing site and your HIV status, go to www.9.5minutes.org. Respect yourself. Protect yourself. Test yourself. This ad is sponsored by the Vandenberg County Health Department through a grant from the Indiana State Department of Health.
Lifetime Church of God in Christ cordially invites you to a Love to Celebrate My Savior, Myself, and Others banquet on Saturday, February the 12th at 5 p.m. at the Kissel Center, located at 413 Southeast 8th Street in Evansville. Come enjoy an evening of chocolate, dining, comedy, music, and fellowship. Tickets can be purchased at Lynch's, Brown's Elite, and Gale House in Floral for $15 per couple and $8 for singles. For more information or tickets, please contact Pastor LeVar St. Germain at 499-1312.
It's Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville's 14-piece package sale. For a limited time, choose either a 14-piece living room or 14-piece bedroom package for only $12.99. That's a $495 savings. Hundreds of packages are available. Plus, get special 12-month no-interest financing. It's Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville's 14-piece living room and bedroom package sale going on now. Sleep better tonight. Every Sealy and Simmons mattress set on sale now at Ashley Furniture Home Store, located on North Green River Road at Morgan Avenue in Evansville.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warrick County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Welcome back to Radio Rehab, everybody. We're talking to Therese, who soon will have 21 years of sobriety with the help of the 12-step rooms, and she's going to share more about you, about her recovery with us now. So we are back, and also want to invite you to call if you have any questions. Therese could probably, nothing's below the belt. She'd be glad to answer. 424-1400. Give a call if you have any questions. So we're back, Therese. You were talking about those early experiences with you when you first went to the women's meeting and how they were smart enough to see through your facade of strength and functionality.
Right. They saw right through me.
Yeah.
And that's a basic principle, I think, in recovery, that the women stick with the women and the men stick with the men. And, you know, I found a sponsor who basically was someone who helped me work through the 12 steps and just was there to help me sort through things. And, you know, I would call her with a question and I would just be so upset. And she would just make a simple suggestion and I go, why didn't I see that? It's so simple.
You're too smart.
Because you're angry. She'd say, because you're angry. And, you know, I slowly began to identify emotions that I was having. But see, I never let myself feel my emotions.
That's right.
And that was such
a... They even had to help you learn to emotional management.
Oh, my gosh. It took me a while to understand, you know, that this is what I'm feeling.
Sure. Do you think that's why a lot of people get scared and leave recovery?
It is scary. It is scary.
When you have to start feeling your feelings, identifying them, managing them.
Yes, it is scary.
So your sponsor in AA helped you do that?
Very much. I couldn't have done it alone.
Yeah.
I could not have done it alone.
So anger was at the surface, huh?
Anger. I think fear,
and
basically,
fear
was the main emotion.
Sure.
But it came out as anger, and it came out as know-it-allism, mm-hmm. and arrogance, mm-hmm. you know, and it came out in different ways. It came out, you know, being a victim, mm-hmm. you know. Well, if all this had happened to you, then, you know, because there are a lot of gory details I could go into, which I won't, you know, but if this had happened to you, well, you would drink too.
Yeah. Sure.
And
sure.
all that, all the
kind of that entitlement.
Yeah, all kinds of excuses.
You'd get wasted,
really.
Too. I hear that from the kids a lot that I talk to. Remember when you worked with kids? Well,
yeah.
You'd get high too.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's because you don't want to feel the way you're feeling. And I think a big breakthrough for me with the actual alcohol addiction and using any kind of substances was when I realized that when I wanted to drink or take a pill or something like that, it wasn't that I wanted to get high. I just didn't want to feel like I was feeling.
Mm.
And, you know, in AA...
You wanted to be numb.
And my sponsor, with my sponsors, mm-hmm. and the other women that, you know, I've become very good friends with over the years, I've learned I can turn to them and talk about things, and then I don't feel like I was feeling.
Mm.
I don't have to use mm-hmm. substances to make me feel like I... different.
You can talk through it with someone.
I can talk through it.
And that's scary for some people because you have to start having relationships.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Sponsors, like your first real relationship of trust building and intimacy.
That's
wow.
That's right. That's right. And I did not trust people.
Mm-mm.
And I still kind of have trust issues, you know, but...
Well, I remember, though, you coming in, and you always seemed very... You like to learn, because you're bright. So I know this whole thing of Alcoholics Anonymous was like a learning lab for you. I remember seeing you sit in the meetings and really listening. But I could tell your brain was going fast. You were really fascinated by it. Even though maybe I'm not like you all, I think you liked the learning process you were going through in AA.
Very much so. And some breakthroughs were learning that alcoholism is a disease.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of, I felt like it kind of let me off the hook. You know, if I'd had diabetes or I got cancer, people wouldn't ostracize
They'd
me for that.
You.
They'd
right.
weep for me. You
right.
know, and they'd say, do what you need to do to get well.
That's right.
But with people who have substance abuse problems, it's like, get
Willpower.
Up and get going, you know, and
mm-hmm.
Just quit. Just have a couple,
mm-hmm.
you know, just drink Cokes. Well, it's just not that darn easy.
No, it
it's
isn't.
A disease, and it totally can take over your life,
mm-hmm.
and you need to treat it. And how fortunate we are to be able to treat a deathly disease
mm-hmm.
with a program. And it's free.
Yeah.
You know, a buck or two in the basket a week.
Yeah. And we're high on life.
And yeah.
After every meeting.
Yeah. And
why such resistance then?
Well,
for people coming
fear.
Back.
I think it's fear.
Fear, not knowing people, and that you got to break some ice and get to know some people.
That's right. But gosh, I've never been in a more welcoming community.
Isn't that the truth?
In my life. Than AA.
You're
you
right.
know, everybody is just the same. We're all the same.
Equal.
We're all equals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
So you noticed that from the start, Therese? There
yeah.
was some comfort there for you?
Yeah. I felt like I'd walked into the kind of society I'd always wanted to live in.
Me too, yeah.
Where we were all equal. There were no bosses. There were no subordinates. There were people.
I thought Chuck was the boss when I came in.
And
just
he,
had to throw that in.
And he would probably say, as you wish.
Somebody needs to be the boss. So yeah, you're but, right. It's a
But you know,
equal.
I started learning how to live. I started learning how to live and let other people live their lives. And I started seeing what was my business and what was not my business.
Mm-hmm.
I let other people take care of their own stuff. I didn't have to be responsible for other people's.
God, you were learning how to grow up.
Yes. And I was learning who Therese is.
Mm.
You know, I learned who I was. And I had left my church. I was so self-righteous. I was one of these people that just, you know, they care more about the copper roof than people and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I just had turned my back on my faith. And I found my way back to church. And I walked into St. John the Apostle Catholic Church on Bellmead.
Sure.
And again, I found a community of people, of acceptance and warmth and welcoming. And I I found my faith again. And you know, at my church, we all hold hands and say the Lord's Prayer every week, the whole church.
Like a meeting.
Just like in a meeting.
So it's a familiar place,
right. Well, that,
but an
that
hour
evolved.
To worship God.
That evolved
in
our church.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's what we do. And so, you know.
So you never lost that religious belief that there was a loving God. You just drifted away from it in your alcoholism, or did you lose it?
Well, I think I thought that there probably was a God, but he really hadn't done much for me.
Yeah, that's kind of
because,
what
you
I
know, it was
too.
All about me. And, you know, working through the steps, that's part of the process, is that you do get in touch with yourself. And mm-hmm. there's a great deal of fear, mm-hmm. when even for me, you know, when I did the process and the steps where you do that self-examination and you discuss your issues with another person. And, you know, the main thing that came out of that is that I thought that if everybody in my life growing up hadn't been so darn self-centered, that I would have a much better life. And so then my sponsor immediately told me, well, you've just gotten in touch with your major character flaw, which is self-centeredness.
Ooh.
You know?
So then you were able to see it when she was able to mirror it back to you.
Exactly. And so I started to try to work on my self-centeredness.
Isn't that amazing how that comes to us?
Yeah.
Where we're like, wow, we really are self-centered. You
I
know?
Was totally self-absorbed.
Yeah, yeah. And the
and
disease
darn,
does that.
My first husband tried to tell me that.
He did? You just wouldn't listen.
I just wouldn't listen. But, you know, it gave me a place to start. And
so did you like AA then, from then on, when you had your three-year bottom and finally, what, the cops were what really made
yeah.
you hit the final
yeah.
skid?
Society told me I needed to take a look at my behavior, and that's what it took for me. But it
because
was
of a drunk driving,
a
right?
relief,
yeah.
right? But it was such a relief.
Yeah.
And later, I was able to thank Magistrate Williams,
really,
who sentenced me to Dad's program, and,
yeah.
and to go to counseling and to AA meetings. And
so you came in via the law.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does a hero child perfectionist that looks like a star everywhere end up in a judge's chambers, busted?
I was
in jail?
Baffled. I was baffled.
Wow.
But I was
what
also,
a conflict.
But I was also relieved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and I learned who my friends were and the people who really cared about me were glad it happened because I was at, you know, it made
oh,
me.
Oh, yeah. Got your attention.
It got my attention, and it made me start turning my life around. And the
oh,
people
yeah.
who really didn't care about me, it was ammunition for them. But, you know, I don't need everybody.
Right.
I don't need everybody to like
approved.
Me anymore.
Right.
I used to.
Yeah.
I used to think everybody had to like me. You know, I had to be the superwoman and all that, but not at all, you know.
Freedom that is.
Yeah, I'm just a person. And I learned
yes.
something in AA pretty early that really helped me. I was told if there are 10 people, one is really going to like you, one is probably going to really dislike you, and the other 8 really aren't going to care that much.
And that's sort of like that, don't worry about what people think about you, because they seldom do.
They seldom do. They're thinking about
that.
Themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I don't know. I just got, you know.
Did you get right into recovery then? Or
yes.
Were there relapses?
No, I didn't have any more relapses after
that's
I.
Isn't that something? My sponsor, too. You don't meet a lot of people that didn't relapse a lot.
Well,
He never relapsed either after his first introduction into AA.
Well, but see, I had been introduced to AA 6
right.
years
you
earlier.
Yeah, so you
and,
did.
And no, it took me another 3 months, I think, to really surrender.
Mm-hmm.
But once I picked up my last white chip, I didn't.
That was it.
That was it. But I was so fearful mm-hmm. of not being able to stay sober for 30 days. I picked up my last white chip the night I picked up my last 30-day chip.
No kidding. Just added security.
Yeah, yeah.
So you didn't really believe you could stay sober.
No, I could not drink.
Right,
I could not
right.
not drink. And
so did your kids ever understand that their mother had alcoholism? Did they see your, they probably didn't see the worst of your drinking.
Well, they saw enough.
Yeah.
They saw enough. And I think my oldest child probably still carries some
Heard about it.
Mm-hmm. But my younger son just, you know, laughs about it. And
yeah.
He was okay. But, you know, that's their personalities.
Sure.
You know, I did the same thing to both of them.
Right. And mothers can't get consumed with that with their kids either. They got to come in with sobriety, number one, in their mind and heart, don't they?
Yes.
You can't get sober for your kids.
No.
It helps.
But, you know, your kids have their own lives to live, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, in AA, I've learned with the support of women over these years, because my life went on. You know, mm-hmm. My kids were growing up. They were teenagers. They getting out of high school, you know, and I learned some of the most important lessons about living, and that's that you can love someone, but you don't have to condone what they do.
Right.
Unconditional love.
Right.
You know, but you don't have to have it in your face every day. And it helped me learn how to love people. Mm. Helped me learn how to accept people for who they are, because that was a big part of my problem. If people would just act right,
yeah,
then, you know, my life would
everything
be good.
Would be better, yeah.
But life is messy.
Yeah.
Life happens. Life doesn't go that smoothly. But in AA, I've gotten the tools to be able to separate myself from
the drama of everybody else's stuff.
The drama of having
their messes.
Yes. They're responsible for their own messes.
Yeah, because you being a hero, I would think that's a struggle for you in recovery. You want to fix everything.
Exactly.
And you've had to learn, whoa, wait a minute.
Well, when I discovered I can't fix myself.
Oh, no.
You know? So I can't, how could I expect to fix anybody else?
Yeah.
You know? But I can be their friend.
Right.
And I can let them know I care about them and I love them. And if they ask me for advice, by golly, I've got it.
Yes, absolutely.
And I learned so much from the women I work with. And I've learned so much from my kids.
You talk a lot about the women and the women's kind of movement within AA and mm-hmm. the women's meetings. Do you think as a woman and a mother that it is important for women new in recovery to surround themselves with more women's meetings, or do you think it doesn't matter as long as they're in meetings?
I think it's important to align yourself with a woman's group.
Yeah.
I truly do, because women have issues. Women don't compartmentalize like mm-hmm. men do.
Mm-hmm.
We're not this, and this. We're everything all together. And women understand that, and men don't understand that. I think that a lot of women, or I know I could do this. I could go to a mixed meeting, and I'd just have a blast, you know, and I'd flirt with all the men and blah, 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 but I didn't really find recovery.
Mm.
But I went to the women's meeting, and they didn't fall for all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They could see right through me because they all acted the same way when...
Right, sure.
They were out, you know.
Sure.
So I think the women have the ability to help each other in a way that, you know.
It's unique. It's special.
It's special.
It is.
Because we can keep our focus right on what's going on. And, you know,
yes.
That's the way life has
sometimes
always been through
that.
The centuries.
Yes. And
you
sometimes
know.
You need to speak to those special needs.
Mm-hmm.
We started the young people's meeting here in town, mm-hmm. Chuck and Tony, and they were very active in that. And everybody was mm-hmm. like, oh, that's a specialty group. It's a young people's group. But young people need other young people.
Exactly.
Women need other women.
That's right.
So.
And, you know, one thing that I've noticed with our group is that, you know, we'll have African-American women come and go, and I don't understand. I think maybe they feel like there aren't enough other African-American women.
Other sisters there, yeah. There's the KISS group.
Is it?
On Thursday nights.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, at Impact Ministries at 7:30.
Okay.
KISS, the Keep It Simple Stupid group. And that is, there's a lot of African-Americans
oh,
at that
good.
Thursday night group. It was started
so
by the Drug Crisis Referral Center. Yeah, it's awesome.
Okay.
It's a great meeting.
Okay.
But I think you're right, and I think a lot of folks that have come on here have said, yeah, it would be easy to sit around and think, wow, AA looks awfully white.
Right, but I wish they would just keep coming, because if the two that come this week and the two that come another week, if they would just keep coming,
yes,
before long, we would have a very good mix in
absolutely
our group.
Absolutely.
And
I don't know why.
And
I
love African-American people. I'm married to an African-American man.
Yes. And Chuck's been on the show, and he said, you know, it didn't matter. I had to go into Alcoholics Anonymous colorblind. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even thinking about skin color, race, religion, anything. I was just thinking, I got to get clean.
Yeah, I've got to get help.
Well, don't go away, Radio Rehab. Teresa and I are getting a great conversation going. God, it's just getting revved up, so don't go away. We'll be right back. We've got to take a little break.
WEOA, the most diverse radio station in the tri-state, is proud to announce two new exciting programs for our Hispanic friends in the community. Tune in every Saturday afternoon at 12:30 to the new 24/7 Dad's Hispanic program in Spanish, sponsored by the Juan Diego Latino Center. The half-hour show discusses life skills, parenting, and a host of other relevant topics. Conexion Thalia Radio Show. Thalia is a platinum-selling recording artist, internationally known, and nationally syndicated radio host. This popular two-hour weekly program comes to Evansville by way of WEOA every Sunday afternoon from 12 to 2 p.m. Thalia discusses music, fashion, and entertainment. See you this Sunday at noon for the Conexion Thalia Radio Show, sponsored by the Juan Diego Latino Center. Listen to the Doug Banks Show every weekday at 4:20 p.m. for your chance to win a $50 Fifth Third Bank gift card. Every daily winner will be entered in a drawing for $1,000 for themselves and $5,300 for a local charity of their choice from a list provided. The Fifth Third Bank $5,300 charity donation right here on 1400 AM WEOA.
This is my way to learn Spanish.
This is my way to learn French.
My way to learn Russian.
Italian.
Japanese.
My way.
My way.
Chinese.
My way to learn a foreign language.
The best way to learn a foreign language is your way. Rosetta Stone invites you to try absolutely free our latest solution, new version 4 Totali software. Developed around the way you think and the way you learn, the same way you learned your first language. In fact, it's been recognized as the fastest, easiest way to learn a language, guaranteed.
It's totally my way to learn Spanish.
No classrooms, no boring drills, no useless memorization. It's a learning program that works around you, not the other way around. And right now, you can try it absolutely, positively free with a free demo CD-ROM.
Free. That's definitely my way.
Try the new version 4 Totali for free by calling 1-800-335-1656. 1-800-335-1656. For your free demo, call 1-800-335-1656.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warrick County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Welcome back, Radio Rehab. We have a great discussion going with Therese, and she's been talking about women in recovery. And during the break, we were just talking, God, how do you get in an hour everything you want to share with somebody? But I had asked Therese if she thought it was different for a woman trying to come in and get sober as opposed to a man trying to come in and get sober.
Well, Lisa, I was always one of those people, like I said, you know, I didn't feel any. I just wouldn't feel anything, and I was an achiever. And so I just thought what's good for the goose is good for the gander, you know, and I never like hid my drinking. I would just go to the neighborhood bars after I got sober, I realized that there really is a real double standard. And, I was, you know, if a man drinks, if he's an alcoholic, well, it's sad, you know, but he's got so many good qualities. Well, if a woman is an alcoholic, and she's found out, and I mean, she's everything but a good person.
Especially good mother. I've even heard in the drunk driving, how could she have her kids in the car?
How could she have done that?
Where a man, it's drunk driving. Yeah, they don't bring up, well, he had his kids in the car.
But the question is, if you're an alcoholic, how could she have not done that?
Yeah.
Because you can't not do it if you truly, you know, if you're drinking and using has got you.
Into an addictive disorder. Yeah, there's no return.
There's no return. You don't have any control over it. That's the nature of the disease.
The loss of control. What do you say to young people that are coming in? We're seeing so many more young people now than when you and I came
in. It's wonderful. When I came in, I was like 38, and I think the average age now is like in the 20s.
Uh-oh, guess what? We have a call.
Oh, great.
The 20-year-olds, are you up yet? Don't go away. We've got a call coming in. Hi, welcome to Radio Rehab.
Hi, how you guys doing? My name is Shirley, and I was just wondering.
Hi, Shirley.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Oh, sure. I was just wondering how, are there any women's groups in the area for, you know, women who do have that stigma to get help and support?
Thanks for calling and asking that. We were just kind of going through that too. Maybe a lot of women don't even know where to go.
Yeah, well, I just tuned in, and I'm so glad I did. And thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling. Let's ask our expert about that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Thanks,
love you, Cheryl.
Well, there are several women's meetings in town. There's the Friday Night Women's Anonymous at Old Stone 3 on Walnut Street across from Vincent DePaul. There's a Tuesday Night Stepsisters group at St. Anthony's. I believe they meet at 5:30. They meet 5:30. At 5:30. St. Anthony's on First Avenue across from Hacienda.
Norma started that group. That's been around for...
Yeah. She did. There's
5:30. And they're never longer than an hour, right?
Right. 1 hour.
Okay.
There's a Thursday night meeting at St. Paul's, I think what kind of church it is, on the west side of Evansville. It's on Michigan Street right near St. Joe. Now, it starts at 6:30.
Okay. Wednesday night, did you say there was one?
On Wednesday night?
Or were you thinking about St. Paul's?
That's on Thursday night.
Okay.
And
then
there's
a Monday night Newburgh Women's Meeting at the Kiwanis Club.
Right.
From 7:30 to 8:30.
That's right. And if someone is interested in a schedule of meetings, you can look in the phone book and look under AA and call the central office. And there is a meeting schedule of all the meetings in the whole area, the times and the places.
So people could get, they could look, Google it, look up Alcoholics Anonymous, Evansville, Indiana, hit women's meetings.
Exactly. And
so there's almost a women's meeting every night.
Yeah, pretty much. But if you're an African-American woman out there and you've, you know, thought about coming to the rooms and you've even maybe ventured in and you thought, gosh, it looks awfully white in here. If you would just come, we can change that.
Yes.
Because we don't want it that way. I don't want it that way. And on you would be welcome with open arms.
We
know everyone who comes in has so much to bring. And we're all the same. We're all in the same boat. And
we really are in the rooms pretty colorblind.
Oh,
it doesn't
absolutely
matter what your story is, what your color is, what your age is, what your drug of choice is. You're going to be welcomed in a 12-step program. Give it a try. Heck, what have we got to lose?
What have you got to lose? That's a very good good comment, because you have a lot to lose. You have, like, misery to lose.
Yeah.
You have lost days and nights to lose, and you have lost relationships to lose, you know,
isn't
to get
the
back.
Truth? It just does seem
to
so
get
simple.
Back, it's such a miracle, and there is a set of promises that we read at every meeting, and some of those are, you know, you'll intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle you. It's so true.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, I know how to handle any situation. I get on the phone and I call one of my support people and I say, geez, I don't know what to do. Tell me what to do. And we work it out. So there's nothing, no problem today, you know, I haven't been able to face in the past 21 years.
And you have been sober almost 21 years. Did you ever think that even be possible?
No, and it seemed like it was so far ahead of
yeah.
you know, I never thought it would be possible.
What but do you think has been your biggest challenge to stay sober and drug-free?
I think when I got over that hurdle of realizing that it wasn't the drink or the drug I was seeking, what I was seeking was to not feel the way I was feeling.
God, that's important for us to know. So it's really not the drink and drug that we're looking for. It's to not feel that we're looking, to numb out. There's another caller.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Hello.
Hello, this is the same caller. This is Shirley calling again. And
hi, Shirley.
Hi. I've heard through the grapevine that the women in Alcoholics Anonymous just have one heck of a time. I've heard there's just all kinds of get-togethers and fellowship, and I've heard that it shows you a way to have fun without drugs and alcohol. Could please speak to that?
Thank you for mentioning that, because we were just saying too, Shirley, there's so many young people coming in now, and it does have to look fun and exciting. You're right. It can't look all analytical and intense.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those parties you were talking about are at your house. So, Therese,
there are parties all the time. I mean, there's Super Bowl parties tomorrow. There are Valentine dances. There's nothing as exhilarating as dancing sober. And you just don't even, you know,
that's
it's just
right.
a kick.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is we remember these parties and how much fun we had.
There's a good point. We remember what we did.
Yes,
and we
that's
don't have to
true.
Lie to our parents or anyone else about where we are.
Well, I just have one more comment, and then I'm going to let you girls go on with your program. I just want to say that I have met some of the most amazing women in Alcoholics Anonymous, women that I would never have crossed paths with, and my life is so much richer today for that.
Aw.
Thanks, Shirley.
Yes, uh-huh. Shirley, thank
nice
you.
Talking with you.
Shirley, you just celebrated how many years on the first?
24.
Wow. Who'd have thunk it, right?
Not me.
I know. Isn't that great? One day at a time, here we are. Well, thank you for calling. I'm getting you on this show next time.
Thanks, Shirley.
You know, really, I mean, all of us come in with so many different, like, defense mechanisms and denials and defiance about joining this most awesome fellowship.
Yes, we do. And, you know, what attracted me to my first sponsor who helped me get a start in this program was that she could laugh at herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so serious. Oh my gosh, you know.
Yeah.
And in fact, when I chair meetings, we do it for a month at a time. And I always try to include over serious anonymous as one of my meetings.
That's great. Yeah.
Because, and like the KISS group, keep it simple, or
right.
Rule 62, don't
right.
take yourself so seriously.
We insist on having fun.
We
are not a glum lot.
We insist on having fun.
So we have 1 minute left.
And
tell us in a minute what we still need to hear about Therese or what you'd like us to know in closing.
Well, I guess two things happened that were just incredible gifts. When I was 39 years old, the same age my father was when he died, I picked up my one-year chip.
Mm.
All my anger and resentments toward my father had gone away. I had been relieved of those. Instead of feeling sorry for myself, for what I'd lost, I felt sorry for him for what he'd lost and that he had never found this. That was a miracle.
What a turning point.
What a turnaround.
Yes.
And also, I think I've learned to laugh at myself because, you know, if I don't laugh at myself, I'm probably missing the best joke around. You know, it's all about me, you know.
That's awesome.
But we do have fun. We
yes.
do have fun. So please come join us Friday night, 7:30, Walnut Street, across from St. Vincent de Paul.
Walnut and Evans.
Yes.
And there's also Johnston Supply
mm-hmm.
there. Sure, please. Yes, if you're suffering or if you have a family member that you think is drinking too much.
Yes, our meeting is an open meeting.
Yeah,
so
come to some open
are
meetings.
Welcome. Right.
Well, Radio Rehab, this has been a great hour. Thank you for tuning in. Shirley, thank you for calling, and all you listeners, thanks for your support, and we hope that today's program passed on some hope to some folks that are listening. So, we are closing. Therese, will you come back? Gotta
sure.
come back, definitely.
Okay.
Even
Thank
host
you.
It for me once in a while. Take right. a vacation.
Uh-huh. I'll All see right. if that matches my skill set.
Absolutely. I need a hero on here every once in a while. Well, thank you, Radio Rehab. And between now and next week, don't forget to do the next right thing.